It's that time of year when the fall sports season is heating up everywhere from the preschool soccer fields to the NFL gridiron. Our sports-obsessed culture will be in full gear as we do everything from playing to spectating. If all of a Christian's life is to be an act of worship, how can we engage in our playing, sports parenting, and spectating to the glory of God? How do we push back on a culture that encourages us to idolize sport, winning, and sports stars? And how can we shift our priorities so that youth sports don't eclipse the necessary task of nurturing the faith of our children and teens? We'll be talking with John Parrott, author of a new book on youth sports, about these important issues on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller here with Chris Wagner in the studio. And surprise, surprise, guess who's back, Chris?
Jason, yeah, welcome back.
Jason is back after a vacation. And we never know where Jason goes, what he tortures his family with in terms of vacations. You went camping, didn't you?
Yeah, we went up into the Tsatus in Idaho.
Okay, did you have any encounters with mountain lions this go-round, or...
No mountain lions this time, no grizzlies, nothing. Just nature and stars and beauty.
Awesome. Well, we missed you. We did make fun of you. Just fair warning, one of these days we figured out how to hook all of our sound machines here.
Sound machines.
Yeah, our sound machines.
That's one way to put it.
Our technology. We know how to hook our technology into my phone. So we're actually going to plan some podcasts where we just spur of the moment make phone calls to people. You know, that's like the best we can do to surprise. So we were talking about getting to you, Jason, while you were camping.
Yeah,
but we spared you this time. So
okay, all right.
Yeah,
I have no idea what.
But you're back,
look like.
And I'm so glad you're back. Now, here's what we're going to do today, just to set a framework for what's going to happen. We are going to be joined later by our friend John Parrott. John has a new book that's been released called Time Out, subtitled The Gift of God, The Gift or God of Youth Sports. Time Out, The Gift or God of Youth Sports, which I know youth workers are going to find very interesting because this is one of the questions I get a lot. You know, I've got kids who don't come to youth group anymore. I've got kids who don't come to church anymore. I've got kids whose families seem to be worshiping sport more than they're worshiping God, nurturing their kids more into sport than God. So we're going to have a conversation with John about that, which will be fun. But before we do that, I do want to go a little bit sideways here because we are in the midst of baseball season, football season, soccer season. All of the fall sports are beginning. I know the kids who play sports here at school are back at it, even though here in Pennsylvania school has not started yet for the fall. But we were talking a little bit before we came on here just about memories of sport and when we first encountered sport. And I want to talk to Jason a minute because, yes, you were on vacation, but you had a really unusual, I think, difficult vacation, Jason, because about 3 weeks ago, I believe, 4 weeks ago.
4 weeks ago.
Yeah, your dad went to be with Christ. So, and you were able to be with him. As he passed from this life onto eternal life. And you and I have talked about our dads before and the love of sport that they instilled in us, especially baseball. Talk a little bit about that. I want to hear about that with your dad, just some of your memories of that. But also just share with us a little bit about what happened for you over the last 6, 7, 8 weeks.
Yeah. Well, let me start with what's happened and then I can share some memory. But we were camping in the Tsatus. It wasn't long before I got a call to just come home. We knew that my father, his time was going to be ending here soon. We just didn't know when, and so we've been ready for quite a long time to get that phone call to come down to Arizona. And So I made a phone call, and we were told it's time, and we packed up and headed right out from camping down to the heat of Arizona, and we were down there for about three weeks, and it was a beautiful and holy experience. It was difficult, but just being able to be there for, we were there for about 10 days before my father passed. And so they often talk about when someone passes, they have a moment of clarity before they kind of go into this next phase of just essentially the body starts shutting down and they move from this life onto the next. And we had this evening, my wife and I had this evening with my dad, where he was just very clear, and it was just a beautiful experience. And I will always cherish those hours that we had before he passed. So, and then I got to be with him when he did pass. And so those are difficult but beautiful moments. I'm really grateful that I got a chance to be there. And then we had an incredible celebration. My dad did not want a funeral or a wake. He wanted a celebration of life. And so we were able to do that with some of his friends. I got to hear stories I've never heard before, which was incredible. My dad probably hid several stories from his ex-wife, my mom, and his kids for multible reasons. But it was just really cool to be able to hear some of those. With regards to sport,
well,
you know,
can I just interrupt you there a minute?
Please do.
Because yeah. I showed Lisa, you put a picture up on Facebook. I think it was right before your dad died, and it was you at his bedside.
Yeah,
and
that was,
I mean, he was smiling. That was a great. Was that that moment where that you talk about with some clarity? Was that taken at that moment? That was an incredible picture, and I don't know if you'd mind, but we can share that with our podcast listeners on the page for this podcast. So. We'd love
You know, that was, it was not planned. I did not plan on sitting there with my wife to have this conversation, but, it was an incredible moment. You know, for the last couple of years, my father has not been able to, there's something that's stolen away from an individual when they can't touch someone. And my father had a condition, C. diff, which was highly contagious. And so although adults could come and be with him and give him hugs and love, you had to be covered up. You had to be cleaned and covered up. And so that was one of the first experiences in quite a long time where all of our kids could be in the room. There wasn't anything contagious, and he was able to just love on and hug his grandchildren. And so it was just a beautiful, beautiful time where he was joking and just being papa to my kids, which is not something he's gotten to be able to do the last few years. And then we went from that to just having this great conversation. So that was one of the last times I really got to have a conversation with my dad that was where he was all there, where he wasn't going in and out of sleep, where he wasn't confusing sleep with reality. And
so that was neat. Thanks for posting that put some meat on the bones, I guess, of the story. As you and I were corresponding back and forth, and I've never met your dad, so that was really neat to be able to see that. But you were going to talk about your dad and sport and the love of sport. So Jason, he steered you wrong with your allegiances, I guess, right? Isn't he the one who made you a Cubs fan?
Well, he's the one that made me a Cubs fan. I thought you were going to move towards a conversation around soccer, but
we don't have time for that.
Actually, in reality, he led me to the Holy Land. He you know, you talk often about what it means to live with sacrifice and what it means to mourn things that happen in this life. Well, being a Cubs fan for most of my life up until about 2 years ago was exactly that.
Walt does often ask us to pray for suffering, right?
Yeah, suffering, right?
Yeah, really.
And sacrifice and suffering. And so I got to experience that for many of my years as a Cubs fan. But, my love of sport, definitely, I get from my dad. He probably would not have chosen, much like you, that I played soccer and made that my one true sport. But baseball, my love for it, really has its roots with my father. Now, if my father really would have had his way, he would have put me on a horse and made me ride bronc, but wild bronc. But he didn't quite get his way. Although later in life, he got me to you know, get on top of a bull. And anyways, there's just that's a whole nother story. But
say that again. He made you get on a bull?
Yeah, he wanted me to get on a bull and see what it was like. It was just it's a long story, but yeah, they're not old bull and then mechanical bull two different times. It was So younger when the old bull was in the picture, and then later in life with the mechanical bull. But my dad, I think my dad would have chosen that I picked up something.
I've never heard this from you. In fact, I can honestly say I've never had this conversation with any human being. This is the kind of thing.
My dad made me ride a bull.
Yeah, my dad made me ride a bull and then a mechanical bull, and he wished I was on a bronco. You know, the one person that I would expect to have this conversation with would be Duffy Robbins. You know, that he would come out with something like this just so outlandish out of nowhere.
But and you Jason, wouldn't be sure whether or not to believe him either. That's
well, no, I believe Duffy. I mean, he is one of the most interesting men alive. So, but you're running a close second right now, Jason. So, yeah, I've never I was never allowed to ride a mechanical bull because my parents – and I'm talking – well, the mechanical helicopter or the mechanical fire engine outside of the grocery store. My parents thought I'd get.
Yeah.
They didn't want to spend the quarter, and the excuse they always gave was, if you get in that thing, you're going to get electrocuted. So that's an accident waiting to happen. That is a death waiting to happen, and so I grew up terrified of those things.
Well, hopping on top of a bull probably means you would have just had that bull land on top of you.
Yeah, but that's cheaper. You don't have to put a quarter in the doggone thing. So, yeah, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about sport today. And John Parrott's here. He's going to join us. John, welcome.
Hey, Walt. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad you're here. John's a friend who's I've known for a few years. We first met down at Southern Seminary when that was it, right? Was that the first time, John, down at Southern?
Actually, it kind of hurts. You don't remember our first time that we met, but it was down at Pear Orchard Press. I had you come speak to our parents.
That's right. All right, I remember now. I remember now, right? It was, and we were in a an auditorium of like a, was that a local high school or a community college?
Yeah, it was a local high school that sat about 600-800 people, and I think 60 people showed up.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
Really, really encouraging night. Now that's a reflection on me more than you. So
yeah, good to have you on, John.
And actually, I will say. A lot of people said they couldn't make it because of sports that night. So maybe that'll
interesting.
Work as a segue later.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So John has written a book called Time Out, The Gift or God of Youth Sports. We're going to talk about that. John's also working now as, what's your official title with Reformed Youth Ministries?
Director of Resources.
Director of
at
Resources. Right. So you're doing a lot of, you're podcasting, you're writing. You're putting resources together for parents and youth workers, and Reformed Youth Ministries is a group that I've come to really appreciate and love, and we've been involved with here at CPYU for a few years now. So, yeah, thanks for reminding me about that, about coming down there. I can still remember that room, yeah. But we did reacquaint ourselves at Southern when you were actually working on this as a project for your Doctor of Ministry degree on faith and sport, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Good. Good. Well, we're going to come back and talk about the book, but I know Chris has, big sports fan that he is, he's prepared some kind of, what is this? What do we call it? Is this a quiz or is it a?
I don't, at the beginning of each of John's chapters, he has a, I think they might all be movie quotes. I'm not sure. Is that right, John? Does that?
For the most part, I want to say every one of them is, except I know one off the top of my head is a quote from Jerry Seinfeld, stand-up routines.
That's right. And you're a big movie buff, isn't that right?
Pretty big.
All right.
Yeah, so, but I have a feeling you're going to test me on that, and then I'm going to fail miserably.
No, that's all right. So here's what I've done. I've just pulled some – so you start each of your chapters out with a quote that has something to do with sports. A lot of them, like we said, are from movies. So I have some quotes here. Some of them are from movies and movie characters, and some are from real-life athletes, coaches, pop culture figures. So I figured I could just go through a few of these, and you guys could have some fun trying to take a guess as to who might have said them.
How do we? Do you want to address one of us at a time? I have to go over the rules.
Hey, let's just do this as let's do it as a team, right?
Do it as a team. It's teamwork. That's what we're trying to promote with sports and athletics, right?
Well,
that's right.
I'd actually prefer to you go head win. To head with these guys and win.
All right, start. Okay, very good. We're going to start with this one.
We'll do a team. We'll do team.
All right.
We'll
do team. Because of Walt wanting to win, we're going to start with this quote. All right. Here's the quote. Winning isn't everything, but it beats anything that comes in second.
I think I know that.
Go for it. I got to get. Hold on. I got to get my dinger.
Well, I've heard. I've heard
the bell.
A variation of this. Not that exact quote, but I think it's Vince Lombardi.
Lombardi does have quotes that are similar to this, but it's not him.
So it's
because Vince Lombardi said winning isn't everything; it's the only thing.
It's the
right?
only thing. That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'll give you a clue. It's the correct sport, and it is a coach. There's your clues.
All right, so that narrows
just
it.
Just say
to
Nick Saban.
1,000 people. Is it a pro football coach?
No. And now you're John's moving in the right direction.
Oh, a college football coach.
And right. It wasn't Nick Saban.
That wasn't Nick Saban, yeah.
Okay. All right. Harbaugh?
Paul Bear Bryant,
Alabama.
All right, we'll stick with that. We'll stick with that winning theme. Winning is the most important thing in my life after breathing. Breathing first, winning next.
Tom Brady?
No, that's a good guess, but nope.
Oh,
we're gonna go owner. I'll give you a clue.
Oh, is this
Jerry Jones?
George Steinbrenner.
George Steinbrenner.
George.
Yeah. But throw that quote in about. Where's the quote from him about? And I will spend all the money I have to buy a team to win championships.
Go for it.
Did he say that?
He did not.
Mr. Yankees fan. Mr. Yankees fan who's waving your rings around at me all the time.
You know that's one thing I do not do. I might like my Yankees.
Well, you don't have any rings. You have no rings to wave.
27 of them, to be exact.
But you don't have them. You don't have them personally, do you? See, look at him. He's getting irritated right now. He has totally lost his focus and his track. He can't even look up. There he's looking at me now. That's awesome.
All right, here. Well, this is an appropriate quote. Go ahead, Jason. What do you got?
I'm pushing it.
Well, I was just going to say, with those 26, 27 rings, still the best shirt in all of sports that I've ever seen going into a stadium was at Fenway when I was walking in before they'd ever won a World Series, and they had a shirt that said you can take your 26 rings and shove them up your hand. They were selling that shirt. They had sold out by the end of the night.
Nice. All right. This just because this, I feel like addressing this to Walt.
Uh-oh. He's mad.
Here we go. Here's
his
the
face
next quote.
Is a little red, too.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Oh.
So that's directed
from?
You're killing me, Smalls.
Yeah, that's a movie quote.
It's a movie quote. That's correct.
Oh, dude, it's a classic movie.
It's Sam. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Sandlot.
That's right.
Yeah, I think Jason had it as well.
I could tell Jason was out there. All right, we'll stick with the movie ones here too. I don't think I'll be able to do this quite the justice it needs, but just a bit outside.
Major League.
Very good.
Yeah.
Major League.
Major League.
That's Bob Uecker, right?
That's Bob Uecker.
Yeah. His character, anyways.
Yeah.
All right, here's one I thought was good. I never did say that you can't be a nice guy and win. I said that if I was playing third base and my mother rounded third with the winning run, I'd trip her up.
What's a sport?
Well, are you serious?
I'm joking. I asked that for Jason.
Is that Bull Durham?
Yeah.
No, this one is not from a movie.
No, this is an actual third baseman. Is this someone who played for the Yankees?
No, did not play for the Yankees.
Well, I'm guessing it's not Mike Schmidt. I don't know that he'd...
This was a coach addressing quotes that were attributed to him that weren't exactly correct. So this quote was his way of addressing.
Okay, let me ask. Would that have been Leo Durocher? How about that? You guys know Leo Durocher?
Wow.
Yeah, you should, Jason. You're a Cubs fan.
Yep.
Do you know that name, Leo Durocher? He doesn't know that name. Okay. Looks like he hung up on us a little bit.
Actually,
okay.
We might have lost Jason there.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
All right, give us another one.
All righty. Let's see here. All right. Anytime you think you have the game conquered, the game will turn around and punch you right in the nose.
That's a good quote. That's a good quote just about improvement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, striving in life, never making it. John,
there's a reason I went with this one next. Based on some things that you
and
just
this is,
said about
this
the
is a real
quote.
Life.
This is real life.
Based on things I've said about who?
Based on some of the things you said about the previous quote. About rounding third base.
Is that Mike Schmidt?
Yes, there we go.
Okay.
Thought right, maybe, Mike Schmidt. Maybe draw the connections there.
He, by the way, can I say something about him? Because when it comes to sport, it's really interesting to listen to him. He wrote a book a few years ago. I read it. I can't remember what it was. It was like a memoir of his baseball years. I can't remember the title. But he really has his finger on the pulse of the changes in the game. He now is, you know, two or three times a month, he's in a color commentator for the Phillies on the weekends. And it's really interesting to hear him talk about the differences in the game and the differences in the generations as they play the game right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I agree with that. I've got a great quote.
Very frustrated with a lot of what's happening.
I've got a great quote that would tie into that very well, but we need Jason back for it. So I'll wait for him to
okay.
come back.
Yeah, Jason's dropped off. So.
Yeah. Some of my favorites, of course. I'll just read through some of my favorites. You guys will know who these are, but I love these ones. Baseball is 90% mental, and the other half is physical.
That's Yogi Berra.
Yes, absolutely. So some of the other ones that from Yogi that I wrote down just for the fun
great.
Of it. I never said most of the things I said. You've got to be careful if you don't know where you are going because you might not get there. The future ain't what it used to be. And you better cut the pizza in four pieces because I'm not hungry enough to eat six.
That's awesome.
Those are just some of he's yeah. obviously got tons of them, but those are some of my favorites.
Those are good.
Yeah, that's good. Well, good. Hey, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to have a conversation with John Parrott about his new book. And the book is called Time Out, The Gift or God of Youth Sports. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Are you interested in bringing CPYU to your church, school, or community? A big part of our ministry is the on-site seminars we conduct in dozens of settings every year. CPYU seminars are designed to encourage and educate your audience on a variety of youth culture issues. Every seminar is designed to be informative, practical, and hope-filled. If you want to learn more about our CPYU seminars, available speakers, and the many seminar topics and options in our growing seminar lineup, go to our CPYU homepage at cpyu.org. Click on the seminar option on the menu bar at the top of the page, and you can learn more about how to schedule a CPYU speaker and seminar for your parents, youth workers, and educators. Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller here with Jason Sochenik. Back from a busy summer, as we heard, and then Chris Wagner's here as well. And we're talking about sports. We've got John Parrott here, and John, as I said before, has written a brand new book called Time Out, The Gift or God of Youth Sports. This is a huge issue that youth workers are concerned about. Parents, I think, much less so. Parents need to be more concerned, and we'll talk about that. The book is published by Christian Focus Publications, and it's got all sorts of great endorsements on it. John, let's talk about the book. I'm glad you wrote this, and I know that you and I have interacted about these issues before, but why don't you just start by talking a little bit about what inspired you to write the book?
Yeah, thanks, Walt. Thanks again for having me on and taking the time to have this conversation. I do think it is important for us to engage and think about. Really, I mean, a lot of it began with just my own upbringing. I played multiple sports. I was never a star athlete by any means, but I enjoyed sports. I grew up loving them. And so it wasn't until I got into youth ministry back in 2001 where I began to think a little more critically of sports. I saw some of the negativity as my athleticism began to wane, and I became more of a spectator instead of being out on the field. And I share a story in the book of just a mother berating her son from the stands when he struck out, and just was in disbelief at her fury, her anger towards her son. And so that was kind of a pivotal moment that I look back on that just started to give me more of a critical eye, because I did, like I said, I loved playing sports growing up, still love playing sports, still love watching sports. But that was kind of a moment in my life where I started to just see some of the negative associated with sports. And from that point on, I began to think a little more critically about it. And, as I've been, should say that, been in youth ministry for in some capacity for the past 15 years, and can remember just story after story after conversation talking with other youth workers, just lamenting, so many of our students are, missing this event, not coming around for an entire semester. And so really just after years of those conversations, I thought, you know what, I want to spend some more time thinking about this. And so, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, when I went to Southern Baptist Theological Seminary to work on my D-Men, that was my thesis. And so from about 2014 to 2016, just spent time reading about this topic and talking with others and talking with you. And that's kind of my inspiration to discuss this subject, ultimately rooted in an appreciation for it, but trying to figure out how we as Christians can engage and interact in this sphere of God's culture.
Let's go back to that situation when you were at the baseball game, and you heard the mother berate her son. And I think we've all heard that increasingly so. You were there as a spectator. You had gone, if I remember correctly, to see some of your students play?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and have you seen that happen a lot? Have you seen a growing trend towards that, as opposed to, hey, let's play, let's have fun, sport is to be fun, sports to be played, where it's become much more cutthroat? Have you seen that work itself out in your ministry, in the lives of parents? And if so, beyond just what you heard that day from that mother in the stands, what are some evidences of how we've turned sport into an idol?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say, it seems like there's a definite increase with, aggression specifically coming from parents, from spectators. I definitely saw it. I mean, that wasn't the only time, at that baseball field that night. But I saw it. I also share another story at a Christian basketball tournament, seeing one specific father just in utter fury towards a call that a referee made. So I've seen it definitely firsthand. But it seems like, we hear stories bubbling up all the time. I mean, pretty frequently of parents assaulting a referee, for example. We have, the story that I also share in there of the, and I forget, it was in Texas where the two players targeted a referee, and it came out that, they were told by the coach to target this referee for a bad call. And as C.J. Mahaney and his sermon that was turned into a booklet, Don't Waste Your Sports, he talks about a father who accidentally killed an opponent of his son in a tennis match by poisoning his water. But he put some medication in there to, cause that player to be a bit more drowsy on the court, and it ended up killing the child. And so it seems like we're hearing more stories about this, and it's becoming a little more frequent.
One of the things you say in the book, in fact, the first line in chapter one is this: sport is one of the many evidences of a gracious God. Talk about that, because you're not demonizing sport. We're not to demonize sport. Sport is actually a good thing. Talk a little bit about the theology of sport that you put forth in the book.
Yeah, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because that is something I clearly want to communicate. Yeah, because I fear that anytime sports are spoken of in a negative light, people are going to dismiss and just, you know, not hear that. And so I want people to hear that I love sports and think they are a gift from God. And yeah, played them most of my life, as I said. And saying this, not in a braggadocious way, but I was a scholarship athlete in junior college. I was never a standout athlete by any means, but I love sports and played them most of my life. So I want people to hear that they know when they're reading this book that it's coming from someone who appreciates sports. But yeah, I mean, if you think about, you know, creation, fall, redemption, just in that framework, and we think of what a gracious creator we have in creation, and then as we sin against God and we fail with Adam and Eve, God could have killed Adam and Eve right there on the spot. But the fact that he allowed them to continue to live was gracious alone. And then to see that, you know, now as we're, you know, fast forwarding to 2018, still in a fallen culture, and thinking of the many graces God gives us, graces from technology. I mean, the fact that we're having this conversation right now, two of you are in Pennsylvania, Jason's over in Washington, and, you know, I'm here in Mississippi. I mean, that's a gracious gift from God, technology. And I think sport is something like that, that he gives us something like sports to enjoy. I mean, there's so much from the Christian realm that we can enjoy through sports, like community, for example, the fellowship that occurs at a tailgate or from being on a team together. They're just awesome celebratory moments. I mean, there are moments where we can see, you know, amazing athleticism, whether it's Olympians or on the professional level or college level, just things that we see where we're thinking, wow, that is an amazing gift that the Lord's given to this person. So we can worship God through that, and he didn't have to give us something like sports to enjoy him, but it just, again, because he is so gracious, he gives us things like sports to enjoy. So yeah, I think it's very important for us as Christians to have a proper view of sports, is to yes, look at it with a critical eye, but to also see there is some creational good that we can tap into through sports.
If so,
you know, in that same,
yeah, go ahead, Jason.
You know, one of the things you also mentioned in that same chapter, because you begin with that phrase, but you go further and just even talk about the glimpse of heaven you got to experience in some of your own sport, and so maybe even share a little bit about how sport allowed you to see that, and maybe even the illustration that you gave in the book in that first chapter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think back on, you know, the many sports that you played and the many games and interactions and all of that. It's interesting to think, okay, what are some of the kind of standout moments that you think about? And really, one of the ones that comes to the top for me might be the top kind of sports moment was just this specific soccer team I was a part of, Walt. I'm sorry you don't recognize that in an official sport, but I enjoyed playing soccer. Growing
hey, my
up.
Kid, my kids all played. My kids all played. So.
And so this was a very special team. I mean, we accomplished a lot. I mean, we were very successful on the field, but we had a camaraderie that was just very special. We all got along. It was such a special team in so many ways and in every aspect of the word team. And so there was this one team we were playing, and we were beating them pretty handedly. And so by the end of the game, we noticed that a certain player came onto the field from our opponent's team, and we noticed that he was a boy that was touched with special needs. And so we became apparent that he did not have some of the skills that we possessed, and being out on the field to just dribble a soccer ball was more laborious for him than it was for us. And so without any kind of plan or anything, we just kind of communicated, okay, let's let him score. And again, that's just testimony to that special team. It was like we were all on the same page. We all knew what we wanted to accomplish in that moment. And so sure enough, this guy dribbles past you know, all of our players, gets down to the goal and shoots and scores, or kicks and scores. And yeah, and it was an amazing moment where we all kind of shared that together. I mean, both sides of the field were standing up applauding. We were giving him high fives. We were told later by our coach that the coach of the opposing team called our coach up later that week and just thanked our team for that moment, and said that the boy had actually worn his jersey to church that next day And so it's just a special moment that was accomplished through the gift of sports, that we got a glimpse of, you know, I believe heaven in a sense, where we're all united together, focused on this, you know, this task. So it was a beautiful thing. And again, accomplished through God's gift of sport.
Mm. I'm curious, as you talk about this, thinking back on my own life, it, you know, like you think about life being divided into people who are the haves and the have-nots. And I know there's a pecking order that exists in the youth population with kids as they play. You know, some kids are not athletic. And yet all kids, you know, at school need to take a physical education class. They are involved in team sports, even if it's just, you know, during one period of the day rather than after school. And it can be a time of absolute fear and devastation for those kids who don't have athletic ability, and then for those who do, it's a time to dominate, maybe lord it over others, maybe, you know, your pride becomes excessive. And I'm just curious, I know Jason has young kids, Chris has young kids, you know, I've had kids go through, John, your kids are younger, you know, how do we navigate that? How do we, as adults, navigate that? How do we, as youth workers, navigate that? How do we, as parents, you know, navigate that with our kids? How do we process that? Because I really do believe, that just as there are those great moments of victory, you know, if you remember the old Wide World of Sports introduction, there's also the agony of defeat. But in the agony of defeat, God can do great things. And we can glorify God in that. I don't know if that question makes sense, but I'm just thinking about, to back up, I guess, a super long question there. You know, how do we enter into this world that just idolizes sports, making sports the ultimate thing, and teach our kids how to play well and how to process that? I don't know if anybody has any thoughts on that. I'm really curious.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, a great question, and there's a lot to unpack there, a lot to talk about there for sure. I do think, you know, one of the gifts God gives us is a physical body. And so as his creatures, we are to steward that body. And so sometimes that is, okay, as you gave the example of a child who isn't as athletically gifted, there is still a sense where, okay, well, they've got to steward the body God has given them out of appreciation for the gift that God has given. And so encouraging, you know, some sort of physical activity in all children's lives are important, I think, for many reasons. I mean, there's spiritual implications for that, you know, obviously, as well. But I think, too, we've got to be having those conversations as parents with our children that, you know, this culture idolizes sports. I mean, this culture worships sports. I mean, we see from just all the stars that, you know, when somebody goes to speak at any event, if they have any kind of athletic career or accomplishments, you know, they'll pack out stadiums for people to hear them. And so without a doubt, it is idolized. But we've got to be telling our children, look, it just, if you don't have the gift of athleticism, that doesn't, you know, ultimately take away your identity in Jesus Christ. And so I think, again, we're talking about a question that centers on identity. And I mean, goodness, that is, we all wake up with an identity crisis each and every day. We forget who we are in Jesus Christ. And as parents, we've got to be instilling that truth in our children, reminding them that, you know, they don't get their sense of worth from the fact that they can, you know, sink a three-pointer or whatever. We've got to be pointing them to the fact that if they're in Christ, they're perfect and loved by God the Father, and he's the only audience that matters ultimately. Does that kind of get at what you were asking?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that helps kids process, but it's still difficult. You know, it's still, I think our kids need to realize that there will be difficult things. Life is broken. And mm-hmm. relationships are broken. Our engagement with the good things God has given us, including sport, are broken. And it's going to be tough. Our ugliness comes out. You know, one of the things you said in the book was, let me find this here. He says, sports are not the problem. We are. You also said our sports can be so beautiful while also being so brutal. And I think that that goes with this too. Yeah, yeah. Jason, I want to ask you a question, you know, because your kids are getting to the age where I don't know if they're involved in T-ball or itty-bitty soccer or whatever other sports, you know, are going out there in Spokane. Do you like how I called that itty-bitty soccer? Is that what made you chuckle a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. I've
don't
never
they? Haven't you heard that before? Okay. Itty-bitty soccer?
I've never heard of itty-bitty soccer.
Yeah, yeah. I got other names for it, too. But, you know, itty-bitty soccer. Yeah, we have a joke here for those who are listening for the first time that we're not big fans of soccer here in this. It's such a high-scoring game. I don't know how you can keep up with it. But yeah. That's another point. So, like, Jason, how are you and Emily navigating this at this point? Have you thought about it? Maybe I'm putting you on the spot here.
You know, we really haven't given this a lot of thought just because we haven't entered into that phase yet. This fall will be the first time our oldest will be playing sports. And so he wants to do both baseball and soccer. And so it's a new world that we'll navigate. We've talked to some about the competitiveness, especially among soccer, around soccer, because soccer in the last 20 years since I was playing has gotten a lot more competitive, and it's gotten a lot more expensive. Parents are investing a lot of money, so they want to see their kids do well. And then they have kids that are being, their time is consumed because it becomes almost like a job. So we've talked a lot about how are we going to navigate that, because I was able to go fairly far in soccer without ever having to have done that. Hmm. You know, I actually a question for John would be, what does that look like? Because there's a dynamic of natural talent that happens, and then talent that you have to work for. You said you weren't instinctively a soccer player, but it's something that you had to work hard at. But sometimes when you work at it can easily become more and more of your identity because you're spending so much time with it. What are your thoughts around that? Like how might a family navigate that? Because with someone with young kids and they're not naturally talented, or even they are naturally talented, how do you make sure that it's not the identity driver either for the students or the son or the daughter or for the parent?
Yeah, that again is a really good and tough question to think about, and I'd like to, you know, direct it back to Walt with his wisdom and years to see what he thinks. But I mean, you know, it's, if there's a child who's not instinctively good at a certain sport, but they're interested in it and the family's interested in it, and you've decided as a family, okay, we want to invest in this, then there are, you know, good you know, spiritual discussions that come from that, of, you know, hard work and again stewarding certain gifts to see improvement there. So there's a lot of good kind of eternal conversations you can have just from that process. But I think one of the conversations you have to have as well is oftentimes, you know, as many others have said, to kind of search for idols in our own life, we look at, excuse me, the calendar as one evidence of, you know, what's an idol. And so how much time are you spending on something can reveal, okay, wow, this is definitely an idol in your life. And so I think it's important as a family, as you're trying to pursue this certain sport, if that's the, you know, the example, okay, look, we're going to spend some time on this, and this is something we're trying to kind of steward as a family together, but let's be aware this is not the most important thing in life. And that even involves, okay, look, we put too much time into this week. I believe commitment to the local church is a priority above all else. And so, you know, if it begins to get in the way of church service and church involvement, then I'd say it's gone too far. So I think it's just somewhat of a transparency as parents with the student, with your child, of, you know, this is something we're going to steward and something we're going to invest time in, but it's not the ultimate thing. And we've got to keep that in check and be cautious, because our sinful hearts want to make it the ultimate thing. So that's kind of maybe a general answer of direction, but
yeah.
I don't know if that helps, Jason.
It does. Well, let me ask this. So it seems like in the last 15 to 20 years, there has been a change in the amount of time that students are spending with sport. Because as I go from youth group now compared to when I was in youth group, it just seems like students are way more involved. Is there data that backs that up?
There seems to be. I mean, the fact that there's a term now called early sports specialization, ESS, the fact that that's a term out there now that people kind of throw around and use, seems to imply that there is a greater intensity. I mean, as you're kind of talking firsthand, I mean, for me as well, it seems that the time I left college and got into youth ministry, it just seemed like, okay, the intensity of these youth sports is has definitely ramped up. And so not only just kind of from my personal perspective and then some of the early sports specialization discussions, but then you've also got a lot of, you know, professional athletes that are starting to call this out. And I think if you've got professional athletes that are saying, look, this is a problem, it seems like it is pointing to, you know, a cultural trend that's taking place. Where this has grown. I mean, I forget his last name, Jeremy Affelt. Is that correct?
Correct.
Who's been on this podcast. I mean, kind of gave testimony to that. I know John Smoltz has spoken out on it when, you know, he gave his Hall of Fame speech. So it's definitely, if I had to kind of pinpoint one issue, that's what I point to of just, okay, the intensity of it, seems to be, ramping up, and we just need to be cautious as Christians.
Well, I would add to that as well the identity issue with parents. It's not just kids finding their identity and who they are as athletes over and above who they are in Christ. You know, the primary identity right now is based on achievement on the field, and for many parents, to go back to our original conversation here, John, and what you heard from that mother, you know, sitting in the stands at the ball game, I would guess her identity, her primary identity, is being found through the successes of her son. And we do live vicariously through our sons and our daughters. I remember about 25, 30 years ago, you know, when I was reading David Elkind and reading others who were critical of the way that we were adultifying children and living through our kids, someone referred to our children becoming like houses or cars. They become status objects, and certainly success on the athletic field is like that. And I would point to the fact that I'll talk to parents and they'll start to talk about their kids. And rather than saying, oh, my son plays soccer, you know, ask about activities, it almost seems like they go the extra mile. Maybe this is unfair on my part, but they go the extra mile to say, my son is playing travel soccer. My son is playing premier soccer. It's not enough for me to know that your son is playing soccer. Your son is playing on this particular team. And so we wear our kids now as this. And the Christians really have no place in this. You know, Jesus is to be the Lord of all of life, and that includes play, which, as you have said, John, and you've written so well about it, it is not a bad thing. It is a good gift of God. But as Tim Keller says, good things become ultimate things. They become idols. And the way we check our idols, because you talk in the book, John, about this being a stewardship issue, is we look at, as you've said, our calendars, and then you write as well about our checkbooks, and you're seeing how much time and money we're spending on this. And I think, in effect, we're just basically spending a lot of time, you know, worshiping idols. And so, you know, I think we need to push back on that. We need to take a break, but just one quick anecdote, and I don't know if you remember this, John, or not, but I think it was a year ago, last July, when Lisa and I were down in Panama City Beach for the Reformed Youth Ministries conference, and I was teaching the youth workers down there. We went out to dinner with you and your wife, Emily. Remember we went over to, what's the name of that place where the movie was filmed, Seaside, or?
Seaside.
We went over to Seaside, remember? And I remember we were looking for, we're driving around, it's a very crowded evening, we're looking for a parking space. Do you remember, I should have taken a picture of it, the big, huge SUV that had, you know, all the darkened windows, and in the, you know, it was the typical, you know, sports parent transport vehicle, and the back window, the parents had paid to have one of those wraps made. That is like a big decal that's the full size of the window. It may have been the full size of the back of the car. And it was a picture of their son, who was probably 10 or 11 years old. You know, one picture was of him swinging a bat. The other was like an action shot of him fielding a ball. And then his name was emblazoned on it and the name of the team. Do you remember that? I don't know if you remember that or not.
I'd forgotten about it until you brought it up, but I absolutely do. Yeah.
And we just stopped and stared and said, well, logical outcome. There it is. You know, that's the mm-hmm. next step. And we're just living vicariously through our kids, and we're trumpeting this. And so, yeah, it's as someone once said to me, you tell me who or what you spend your time daydreaming about, and I'll tell you who or what your God is. And this is one of the issues here. And I think, John, you raise it, you know, as you talk about idolatry in the book, and you talk about stewardship as well. Well, we need to take a break. And when we come back, I want to continue the conversation we're having with John Parrott about faith and sport. I want to get a little more practical about maybe there's some ways to teach kids, some ways to teach parents, some steps that parents who are listening here can take, and some steps that the youth workers who are listening can take, because I know this is a huge issue for youth workers. They're really frustrated by it. And then how do we disciple our kids who are athletes? How do we do that? So we'll take a break, and we'll be right back. In an effort to help you help the kids you know and love navigate their emerging sexuality to the glory of God, we've launched a sexual integrity initiative here at CPYU. Thanks to a generous grant from a company called DAS, you can access our sexual integrity initiative and a growing number of resources for free by visiting the website at sexualintegrityinitiative.com. So, guys, as we finish out our conversation here with John Parrott, I just remembered a conversation that I had a couple of weeks ago with an athletic trainer at a large high school, one of the largest high schools here in Pennsylvania. And, you know, I've been asking this athletic trainer, you know, when you meet people who are involved with youth sports, I don't ask anymore like, hey, do you have any great players? I ask about parents, and I ask about, you know, how sin and greed and selfishness is evidencing itself. I guess that's because I study youth culture. But anyway, yeah, I was talking about this, and the athletic trainer said, oh, you need to talk to the team doctor. And so I think I'm going to do that sometime. I'll try to get that team doctor on here. But the team doctor, the athletic trainer told me, had a situation where, you know, they're dealing with injured players. And one of the things that's most frustrating to them right now is there's increased protocols because of liability and what we know about concussions and, you know, CTE and that sort of thing. And the medical staff is trying to keep the players safe. And unfortunately, rather than keeping the players safe, wanting to keep the players safe, the parents are trying to push them back on the field. Mm-hmm. And one father said to the doctor and the athletic trainer, when out of frustration because this kid was not back on the field, and it was an orthopedic injury, this kid's got to be back on the field. He's our 401k.
Wow.
Isn't that unbelievable? Wow. We've got to get this kid back on the field. He's our 401k.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of mentality we're dealing with here, and certainly – that can't be. I mean, I know we get swept up in this, but that can't be present in the church. We are called to live counterculturally. We're called to live to the glory of God. We're called to live obediently. And this is as John says, poor stewardship, and it's idolatry in so many ways. So, Jason, go ahead, John.
To go along with that, because it looks like Jason might be hung up on the video. I'm not sure, but something that's similar to that. I mean, I was speaking at a church not too long ago, and after I spoke on this topic, a father came up to me afterwards and just said that there was a local student who had been injured and missed a few weeks of practice, missed a few weeks of playing. And as he was healing and just kind of going about his daily routine at school, he would get pulled to the side by coaches in the hallway and just say things like, you're letting the team down. What are you doing? You need to get back out there. And so this father was just lamenting to me that it was almost like, I mean, this student was being bullied by these coaches, and he didn't want to go to school because he was, you know, in the process of healing. His parents wanted him to heal, but you had the coaches that were putting the pressure on him to hurry up and get back out there, and you're letting the team down and guilt tripping him. And I say that saying without a doubt, there are phenomenal coaches. I have coaches in my family, but these are some examples of coaches that are using their power and authority in some negative ways. And that's something that I think goes along with that point you're making about the doctor. So,
yeah. Well, you know, you can't be a college sports fan this week or last week, you know, this month, without taking note of what's happening at Ohio State. You know, and there's issues there related to abuse and, you know, some of the stuff related to the Me Too movement. But also, closer to home here where we are in Pennsylvania at the University of Maryland, where a student athlete, a football player, suffered heat stroke, went into the hospital, I think it was 10 to 15 days later, died back in the spring during spring drills. And yesterday, or this week actually, the university president and the AD came out and apologized, saying we have failed. They admitted that they were, I guess, complicit in this is the best way to say it, in that there was this culture there. They're investigating now with a football team where winning and advancement took precedence over the general health, among other things, of the student athletes there in a football program at the University of Maryland. So, yeah, these things are happening. Jason, you had some questions.
Well, I just think that going back to the conversation we had right before the last break around calendar and stewardship for parents, I my thought goes to the youth worker, to the youth pastor that's dealing with this on the other end of it, because I've had multiple conversations, and I see on threads on Facebook questions around, what do I do? We have a retreat coming up, but half of our students aren't going to be able to make it because of sport. Sometimes the more rural the area, the more the sport can take over. But it's not just happening in rural settings anymore. It's happening in the city. Sport has just taken on a new form that gets in the way of extracurricular activity. Even though sport was always intended to be an extracurricular activity, it's kind of become just a major activity. So what would you say to the youth pastor that's trying to navigate this and want to work with parents, want to work with the students so they can play the sport, but also wants for them to participate in church and discipleship and some of the programs they've got going?
Yeah, I mean, you're asking such a good question, a big issue to discuss and think about. And really, I mean, that is one of the driving passions that moved me to write this book. I really wrote it for other youth workers in a lot of ways. Yeah, definitely. There's plenty for parents on there, and I hope parents pick it up. But just after having, as I mentioned earlier, all the conversations with youth pastors through the years, just lamenting, you know, nights where, you know, you show up at a Wednesday large group and, you know, half the group is gone. And like you said, when you get to some small towns, I mean, that can be significant when you don't have students show up. And going from planning the retreats, I mean, we knew anytime we had to plan a retreat, we had to consult the calendar typically to look at athletics to try to plan around that. So I think it's a very it's a delicate issue to bring up for youth workers. I did end up writing something, some articles one time, and had them out on the internet. And another youth pastor told me, he said, look, if I said anything like that, I might get fired. So there are certain contexts where, you know, parents
what
and churches.
Specifically, John, what specifically did you say in the article?
Well, the content of the book and the conversation we're having, just the idolatrous nature of sports and just how much sports dominate and how students are absent from churches because of sports. So just highlighting some of those kind of issues we're aware of, and him just saying, you know, that's kind of in his church context, you can't bring that subject up, that it would, you know, create too much frustration from the parents that he didn't even feel like he could have that conversation. So I guess kind of getting to your question, Jason, on what's the role of the youth pastor. I mean, I want to express caution to youth workers of bringing this issue up, because you could really, I mean, frustrate some people, frustrate some parents, create some arguments for sure, and create some difficulty there. So being wise about it, being discerning about it. But I also think too, I mean, we know that as youth workers are partnering with parents to disciple these students, it's something that has to be discussed, you know. And so there's got to be conversation, and I guess I would try to what I did, practically speaking, I was a youth worker for 12 years in one church. I would just kind of weave some of this talk whenever idolatry came up, you know, just getting students to kind of think about this. Hopefully, you know, even though they're growing up in a household that might not raise the question at all, and they just have a certain worldview that doesn't even see this as anything wrong at all, I would try to, you know, hopefully plant a seed of doubt in that worldview and get them to start just kind of wrestling with it, because, you know, they're going to blink and their athletic career is going to be over and they're going to be, Lord willing, adults shepherding another household. So I saw it as a great opportunity in a lot of ways to try to impart a biblical worldview of, you know, sports not being the ultimate thing in your life. So I guess that was a lot of rambling, but telling the youth worker to be cautious about how they broach the subject, but also encouraging them to broach the subject and to highlight the idolatrous nature of it, the good of it too, for sure. But just try to impart that biblical worldview. Did that get at what you were asking at all?
Yeah. Well, let me even go a step further. Is it unfair for the youth pastor to ask for a commitment from the student, for the year, and to say, I don't think priority is the right word, but to put into context the requirement that they would have as a student leader, or maybe not, you probably can't do this with your students, but just for student leaders, because even for student leadership, this is a difficulty, because many of the student leaders are involved and are playing at a higher level and are involved in multiple. So is it unfair for the youth pastor to say, hey, we really need for you to be here 3 out of the 4 Wednesdays, and if something comes up, we can't either have you or is that unfair to ask of that, to really kind of place some emphasis on that in their leadership?
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair at all for a youth worker to say, look, especially to those who are leaders, look, I need you here, you know, almost every week, and, you know, maybe even have some kind of leadership form that they fill out and ask for that commitment. I know I've done that in the past for sure. To you know, especially as those students are getting older, you want to give more leadership responsibilities to them so they're coming to the ministry to serve others and not just show up. And so I think it's proper discipleship to be, you know, stepping up the amount of commitment that's there. That said, you know, it's definitely unrealistic to think that a lot of students and families are going to just go right along with that. I mean, speaking from my, you know, personal experience, I mean, I had, you know, students where I tried to do this leadership team and asked them for a commitment, but then as soon as the sports responsibilities and commitments came up, I mean, church youth group was definitely the thing to be pushed to the side. And I say that saying too, I did have plenty of student athletes that were committed and came consistently, but I also had those, who, you know, sports absolutely trumped everything. And, you know, I mean, there was, you know, conversations of, well, we made this commitment to the team. And, I think shared in that article, well, what about your commitment to Jesus Christ? You know, I wanted often say that to the student because that could come across as legalistic and harsh to some, but it's a question we need to ask and get them to wrestle with for sure.
Let me go one step further real quick on this, because I here's the interesting part of this is we're talking a lot about them being in the church, but is there anything creatively that a youth pastor or a youth worker could do to go to the student in the midst of this? And maybe it's just as simple as saying, you know, this isn't taken as much of a priority as I would like, but you're a priority, and so I'm going to show up to your games and actually demonstrate what we would love to be able to see on the sport field and in the stands. I mean, is that something that you've seen done, or that thinking outside of the box of some of the ways that we've just discussed it? Are there other ways to think about this?
Yeah, I think that is a good idea for you to show, okay, look, you mean a lot to me, student, and so I'm going to be, you know, a part of this, you know, cheering in the stands for you, showing that I want to be present in your life. I think that could be a positive, you know, a different or a creative approach to doing that. I think, too, I mean, there's got to be kind of that one-to-one discipleship of, you know, as the students get older, especially having hard conversations. Sitting down and just getting them to wrestle with this and say, look, I love you. You know, I love you. Based on our years of experience together, we've, you know, gone on trips together. We've been in small group studies together. But I want you to look at the amount of time you're spending, you know, on this sport, and you know, you haven't been around as much, or even you are coming around, but I can tell you're exhausted, and it looks like you're barely making it because you're so committed to the youth group. You're also so committed to the sport. You're also so committed to academics. You know, we worship a God who commands us to rest. And so even kind of having a conversation there of, you know, where are you getting rest in your schedule? Do you have any kind of idea of a Sabbath in your life or anything like that? So I think not only, you know, having those kind of large group discussions and kind of teaching on idolatry and giving a worldview of sports, but having those one-to-one discipleship moments where you are challenging students on this issue, even though it's a hard conversation to have at times and could end up, you know, creating some frustration that it's worth having for sure.
There's a couple of things you said there, John, that sparked thoughts on my part. If I could just throw something in here, because I've thought about this a lot. You talk about love and tough conversations, confrontation, and that is something we all need. That's the beauty of the body of Christ. We live in an individualistic culture. We worship that, and we think we can go it alone. We tend to enjoy community when community feeds us in ways that we think we need to be fed and that don't, you know, cross us or trip us up or cause us to have to think about change. We tend to run from community when it's confrontational, and we need more of that. That's the beauty of that. You know, families are to function that way. Parents are to function that way, to love our kids enough to tell them the truth. And I think in youth ministry, it's the same thing. So I want to give you a little pat on the back there for what you said about having those difficult conversations. And again, in the context of relationship and love, I think it can be received in good ways. Now, sometimes, obviously, you confront kids who are overscheduled, and they're probably saying, yeah, I'm not enjoying this. I'm pretty miserable, and I can't even talk to my parents about it because this is so important to them. And so there is that tension there, and that's where I think that, you know, where you issued caution before to youth workers about how to talk about this and how to say it, this is where a pastoral staff and a church board or a group of elders need to step back and in their primary care and concern for the spiritual growth and development of people in the congregation, in the church community, they need to say, here's the idols that we've set up. These are the idols in our particular culture here, and we're going to work to smash them. Now, that's where I think a whole church, you know, coming at this and having it come from whoever's in the pulpit, whoever's up front preaching week by week is where it's most helpful. And then the youth pastor's not leading the charge because, after all, you know, most youth pastors are, you know, pastors, parents would say, who are you to tell me how to parent? You're not even married. You don't have kids. Well, that doesn't mean I don't see what's right and what's wrong. It doesn't mean I don't have a good sense of what's good and what's bad for your student or for your child. But I think the church needs to push back on this. And so in a prophetic way, we need to smash our idols. And, of course, to recognize our idols, I think we have to be immersed in God's word first and foremost, because that's where discernment is developed. And then out of that flows the ability to live counterculturally, and I think God gives us a desire as well. So that would be the first thing. But then I want to go to something Jason brought up. This would be a second thing, and I've been asking this question of youth workers who over the years have come to me and said, you know, they're lamenting, all my kids are involved, overscheduled, overinvolved in sports. And I recognize this has gotten worse over the years. From the time 30 years ago I was working in local church youth ministry to now, as someone who studies culture, I see it getting worse. It's cascading. It's snowballing. It is much, much worse. And I think it's got that crowd influence, you know, that we've all gotten wrapped up in this wave and we're riding this wave and we don't want to be left out as moms and dads. But here is something that I think is really important, and that is that if sport and play are a gift from God, there are kids in our youth group, there are kids in our churches who have been uniquely blessed and gifted with the ability to play a particular sport. And these are the people who I think we watch you know, on the television when they get to the highest level and we go, man, that is just a beautiful thing what they just did, you know, causes us to worship. With those kids, what would happen if we said, if we took, rather than a group approach, but a more individualistic approach to discipleship, and we thought about discipling kids not en masse, there's a place for that, but individually into their giftedness, and maybe that would mean that maybe this particular student would not spend as much time in the youth group setting as others might, but I, as a youth pastor, would spend more time with that student, teaching that student how to play to the glory of God, how to develop ability to the glory of God, how to worship God through sport. Because that's what discipleship is, right? I mean, I think about that. So those are just a couple of thoughts that I've had over the years that are very practical. And I think, you know, you address those, John, in the book at some level. So I appreciate you guys bringing those things up. And that's just another way for youth workers to look at it. I don't know what you guys think of that, but obviously not much. You're painfully quiet.
I think those are some good words, Walt. Yeah, that was that was good for sure.
Yeah, you either thought that was just a bunch of garbage, or you are so taken back by the wisdom of that that you're just.
It was great. I mean, I nodded off a little bit, but that was good stuff.
Yeah, Walt. Yeah. It's like when I'm up front speaking. Jason, you've had this happen. You're up front speaking, and you're going to ask questions.
No. And then they come up afterwards. Actually, I love the way that you said that, because I think that's true. I think that you are going to have those students that are standouts, and that even goes to the question I was talking with John about, is what are ways that we can think outside of the box. And I think that that's one of those ways, and I really appreciate the way you're thinking about that, because you are going to have those students that are standouts, that are special, that there is something to what they are doing that can bring glory to God. So I absolutely love that.
I agree.
Go ahead, John.
No, yeah, just reiterating what you're saying. I mean, without a doubt, there are students that come through the years where you think, okay, this person is a little bit on another level, and they could end up playing, you know, in college and beyond. And so I think, you know, for youth workers to be discerning and see that and see, okay, obviously this gift comes from the Lord. Okay, how can we steward it? And even having those conversations with students, I mean, just all sorts of conversations. I can remember, you know, a student who is incredibly fast, and just telling the student, look, you're gifted. You've got a clear gift. Be cautious of being arrogant and boasting in that gift. You know that it ultimately comes from the Lord. And so just having those practical side conversations with those students to hopefully equip them for the next level, and to give them a framework, a worldview to be thinking about if the Lord does end up calling them to that next level.
Hmm. This is good. I know we've come down to the end here and we have to transition out, but I want to mention to folks that the book John has written is called Time Out, The Gift or God of Youth Sports. We recommend it for parents. We recommend it for youth workers. We recommend it for anybody who's a sports fan. I mean, even for a spectator, I think that this helps us understand and gain perspective, biblical perspective, on what it means to be a spectator. And that includes probably a lot of us, the great majority of us, and certainly we need to learn to spectate to the glory of God. I want to mention, before we finish up here, that in the back of the book, one of the highlights for me is an appendix number two, that you've titled, John, Discussion After a Game. And what you've said here is for parents to remain faithful, to disciple their children and impart a biblical worldview to their child, a post-game discussion will be a vital and helpful practice. And what you've done here is you've given some great talking points, some great questions, and even some prayers, simple sample prayer for a win once you win, and a sample prayer for a loss. That would have been what my dad and mom would have prayed with me a lot, you know, after my games, was that prayer for a loss. So, John, thanks. Any parting words you have for folks, John?
No, I mean, again, just thank you for allowing me to come on this podcast and talk about this. I do think this is a very important issue, a very important discussion. I hope that more and more youth workers can talk about this with parents, can have some kind of parenting forums to discuss this, can maybe even take a night out of their large group discussions to talk about this issue, because it's obviously sports are very, very prevalent in our culture. That's an understatement. But it's something Christians must be thinking about. And obviously, if we can have these conversations in the inside the church, where can we have them? So hopefully this will spark some discussion for others.
Thanks, John. And what we do here, if you're listening through a streaming service right now, is go to our website, cpyu.org, and click on the page for this particular episode of Youth Culture Matters, and every book or article that we've mentioned here, along with other resources that we will put up. There's some other books I'm going to mention to Chris. I know Chris has some. Jason may have some that would be helpful to people who want to think theologically and biblically about sport. We'll include all of those things there. And it's just going to be a place where you can tap into a bunch of resources. So as we end in talking about sport, I just want to share with you that Jason and I had a conversation yesterday. I was driving, and Jason, you told me that if the Cubs and the Phillies make it to the playoffs to play each other this fall, what's going to happen?
We're going to go to a game.
Okay, you're going to
come Philly.
Yeah, you're going to come to Philly. We're going to go to a game together. And
yeah.
I just want to say right now that if you wear your Cubs regalia, I am not your bodyguard. Just so you know. Just so you know. I've gone through this with Chris already.
I went to Citizens Bank Park with Walt wearing a Yankees jersey and got some flack for it. I was on my own.
Yeah, yeah. And they weren't even playing the Yankees that night, so we still can't figure out. We scratch our heads and we tell that story. They were playing, who was it, the Brewers?
Yeah, it was the Brewers playoff game,
and you walk in with a Yankees shirt, and he wasn't a foot out of the car when he was already being verbally assaulted. So all those people in Philly need to read John's book, but good. So we'll end with that. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this episode of Youth Culture Matters, and we'll catch up with you next time.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.